I didn't even think about that.
I'm going fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said fish, 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 fishing. Boy, I'm going fishing.
Oh, you lucky little devils. Just think about how lucky you is and maybe how lucky you ain't. But one or the other, there is a live and in-person Fish and Frank. Yes, Virginia, there is a Fish and Frank. It's this one. And that one's Robert. And the other one's RJ. And so all three of us is them that were here. And so when you hear about they, that was us. So... Yes.
Who's on first?
I'm on third.
Right?
Okay. Good day, good day, good day. Boy, I got to tell you, crazy week with the weather. The Peace River's actually up to like 7 feet, the highest we've seen it all season. But then again, it's probably August where the river really gets up, starts running high.
Yeah, probably. I mean, under normal situations, but it still seems like we're down a little bit on our normal rainfall overall, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I was just looking to see what it was. We're running about 2,000 cubic feet a second down the Peace River, right. Which, you know,
it just seems like inland the average, they haven't been getting as much.
Believe it or not, the average is actually, we're right there at average. For this time of year, 1770s average. We're just a little above average, but close enough. Now, in 1945, there was 9,750 cubic feet a second.
Just a little bit of water.
A little more than three times what we've got now. That was flooding. That's why they built bypasses.
Well, let me add something to the discussion. Yesterday, we had a webinar with the National Weather Service for all the emergency radio stations, and one of the things they talked about is we should expect this year to be wetter. The winds to be higher and the amount of rain to be much larger and longer lasting during the course of the storm. So the storms are going to be bigger and longer lasting is what they're predicting.
Really?
Yeah.
The National Weather Service is in on that?
Yeah.
Wow. I don't know. I have a hard time with them because the European models always kick the U.S. models' butt.
Well, that's the National Hurricane Center now. So,
but no, even over the course, just general weather patterns and stuff. Yeah. You know, they always talk about the European model, and then they bring out the U.S. model. And why is it the National Weather Service? I mean, they've got to have funding up the yazoo. If you can't beat the Europeans, fire somebody. Seriously. Get a new computer.
All right,
programmer.
So the question would be, you're out there, you're experiencing the weather. I don't ever go outside, so I have no idea what it's doing out there. But is it raining more?
I thought that was just your pale Irish skin.
That's right.
You just don't go outside at all.
Well, we Irish don't know what the sun is, so.
But you do know sunshine produces good grains, and grains make good whiskey.
Yeah.
So, hey, once you know that, you know. That's the reason the Irish.
You send the kids out to harvest.
So the Irish wouldn't rule the world.
That's right, without a doubt. But anyway, so the question is it raining more?
No.
It's pretty much what you see. You know, Frank, you've been here a million years, so the weather patterns basically the same.
It's not raining any more, any less than it normally does. It's what we're getting more weather patterns off the Gulf this year than what we usually get. But.
That's what's coming in today is a weather pattern off the Gulf,
Yeah, the storm patterns, because we had that cold front drop down from the north, it compressed all that hot air, and that just produces more rain, more turbulent atmosphere. But I haven't seen an increase to amount to anything, you know? I mean, it's...
Statistically non-existent, right?
Yeah, maybe not. I have a hard time with the National Weather Service. Why is the Farmer's Almanac more correct? I mean, that's a guy sitting around in the back room on a card table with, you know, dartboard going, yeah, this is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, and he's looking at the size of moth wings and things like that.
Right. So, and he's pretty much hitting it on the head as well or better than the National Weather Service. So,
yeah, but here's the cool thing about this kind of weather. Literally, it cools things down.
This is the big thing. And we've dropped from in the low 90s to, what, 85 surface temp?
Yeah, 85 to 86 degrees surface temp in the entire harbor.
Now, I'm going to say
that's pretty significant.
The number one factor to me is cloud cover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people think the rainwater itself cools the surface of the water off a lot. And I think that might some degree.
I think depending on the magnitude of the rain, like when we got a day like today where it's raining off and on all day with the cloud cover, it has to have an effect on it. But just an average afternoon thunderstorm that zips by at 30 miles an hour and dumps an inch of rain on the harbor, I don't think it has that big of an impact on it.
I think it's the cloud cover is the number one important, because the clouds absorb the UV radiation from the sun. That solar radiation hitting the water is what heats it up the most.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just the way it is. That's why you get sunburned, the solar radiation. And with the cloud cover, you don't get that, you know, pounding effect on the water, and you don't, it cools off rather quickly. Throw a little bit of rain on top of it, yeah, there's the icing on your cake for as far as dropping the water temp. Up in Lake Michigan, they had an upwelling, which when the wind is blowing from one direction, it'll blow the surface water away from, say, one shoreline. Like, say, if you're on the east side of the lake and the wind blows out of the east, it blows the surface water all the way towards the other side. Well, something has to take that place. So the water from the deep comes up to fill that space, because water's got to stay at that level. So if all the surface water is being blown away, that water from down below comes up to replace it, and that water's colder than the surface water. So you're going to have a very dramatic decrease in temperature very quickly, because the wind can blow the surface warm water away from there. Now, could have a effect, like, say, on the beaches of the Gulf of Mexico, but not in Charlotte Harbor, because we just don't have the depths and the cool temperatures at depth to have an upwelling, a cooler effect from that.
Not of any real significance that are measurable, I'm sure.
Yeah, I do think that might be one of the reasons why, as soon as we get those, you know, that northeast wind, and it starts blowing that surface water in the Gulf of Mexico out away from shore, I think that is one of the reasons why. You ever notice how much the water temp will drop cooler there in the Gulf? It'll get cooler quicker than it'll get warmer.
Yeah.
And I think that might be one of the reasons. And that was actually pretty cool to watch how that worked.
On the other benefit of the rain, too, though, like especially on these long days like today where it's raining multiple times throughout the whole harbor, is that
to use top water. Yay, all day.
Well, that's the overcast part. I'm talking about the rain part. The rain part is going to actually help oxygenate some of the shallow flats because it's beating on the surface itself. I don't think it has a profound impact in the center of the harbor, but up on the flats, you've got that wind drop or rain droplets hitting the surface and help create that little bit of more oxygen. And since the water temperature cooled down a little bit, it holds the oxygen just a little bit better. And then one of our guys had a kind of interesting theory a couple of years ago on that first really good rain of the season. You know, mangroves actually excrete the salt that they're absorbing from the growth, and just the evaporation, it hangs out on the roots and the bottoms of the seawalls and bottoms of boats. Your first rain pushes some of those minerals right back into the water and can help kind of reinvigorate some stuff.
All right. You're talking about reinvigorating, like, bait, like tiny crabs and minnows
Or
are you talking about reinvigorating the mangroves and seaweed? What are you talking
about? All of it, because salt is actually a mineral that contains magnesium and zinc and a couple other little minerals that all plant life
feeds. So it's
on.
A one-a-day vitamin or one-a-year vitamin for the flats.
Yeah, it's just kind of that little, like, vitamin B12 boost.
All right.
It only happens once, really, during a good hard rain.
Okay, RJ, I'm sitting real close to him, so I'm not going to say anything. So is this a ism or is this a possibility of fact?
I'm going to stick with possibility, but it's very probable.
Possibility, too. I don't know that it's true. My guess was with the rain, you know, that water's coming down from 2,000 feet. There's got to be a lot of oxygen in each drop when it hits. So it's probably bringing oxygen into the water when it does that.
All right, I will go with fact on the oxygen part.
Okay, but now here's a useless weird fact. Now, wait a minute, let's rephrase that.
Another?
What does rainwater contain as far as a mineral goes? Vitamin B.
Vitamin B?
Mm-hmm.
Son of a gun.
Rainwater has vitamin B?
Yeah. I'm almost positive it's vitamin B. A small, tiny piece of it can contain vitamin B, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's why they call it sunshine. No, it's D. I'm sorry.
That's vitamin D.
I got my commercials mixed up. That's D3.
I remember reading something about it. It was like it's such a minimal amount, but they were.
How old is rainwater?
As old as the water it is that evaporated around it. I have no idea.
3 billion years. Yeah. It's something like 3 billion years old, rainwater is.
Yeah.
That rainwater is the exact same water or thereabouts that was falling when you were a kid. Yeah. If you're 70 years old right now, the very first time you got caught in a rain shower, that's pretty much the same water. It's not new water all over again. We only have this amount of water. It's billions of years old. And you may think, okay, it's raining, oh, it's fresh and new water. No, it's not. It's the same water that's been on the planet forever. Now,
talk about recycling.
Yeah. That's one thing that people really need to understand. Rain is not new water. It's the same water. This is what we got. This is what we're dealing with. Speaking of dealing with it, is there spade fish at Ponce Park? People are catching those pretty steady right now.
Yeah, I mean, ever since we talked about them a couple few weeks ago and you gave some good descriptions on how to fish for them, a handful of people have been actually applying that and being successful with it. And I think part of that is obviously listening to some of your information and advice, but this is the time of year when the rains do start pushing that river a little bit and get those nutrients going, where we get that influx of those little tiny jellyfish that are all over the place, which is a primary food source for spade fish.
So, yeah, the spade fish, it's really kind of cool to hear about people over the last week or so since we did that program, how many people have told us, oh, yeah, we went out, we got spade fish. And one of the gals filleted one up, ate it. Wasn't too bad to clean. The meat looks a little funky, but tastes good.
Yeah.
So as you're cleaning it, the meat actually kind of changes color on you. But she said it wasn't bad to clean. She said it was pretty good. So, you know.
I think it's a little easier fish than some fish because it has such smaller scales on it. You're not
like
having
more like leather than it is scales.
Yeah, you're not having to saw through it like some of your larger scaled fish. So,
speaking of larger scales.
Okay.
Balancing it out. Spade fish, averaging pound maybe?
Yeah.
Black drum, 40 pounds average.
Yeah.
Where are the black drum?
They're still catching a lot of them in the Punta Gorda Isles and in the Port Charlotte canals. I'm not hearing a great deal of them anywhere in the harbor on the flats or the intercoastal.
BSI, Burnstour Isles got a few.
Burnstour Isles got quite a few. Behind my house had some the other day, and it was funny because, you know, my girlfriend catches all the fish pretty much. I just sit back and watch because I'm going to get out fished anyway, or I catch the very first catfish, then I'm done and I'm just going to watch anyway. But there were several black drum that kept cruising back and forth along the seawall, and she was bound and determined for me to catch one, because I've never caught one of any size off of my dock. I've caught big ones other places, but never off of my dock. And she caught that 50-pounder a few weeks ago, 40, 50-pounder a couple weeks ago. So she was bound and determined. Sure enough, she got me hooked on the one, and I got the fight one that was probably about 20 pounds and landed it right off the dock behind the house. So she became the guide the other day, which was pretty funny, and just to add a little salt to my wounds. but it was really cool because she was watching them, and she can see them better because the murky water. My eyeballs are crap anyway, but in that murkier water, I'm having a little trickier time. But she was following them back and forth from the corner of the seawall over to the neighbor's dock. We opened up the gate, and we're walking through the neighbor's yard trying to find out where they were going to cast out in front of them, and got one. And I actually took home some clams last night, so we're going to try those for the next time they show up, because we discussed that before. I'd be real curious.
We carry clams, and it's not a good selling bait. We have a few people, and we probably sell a case a year, but we carried Silversides for years just because I would use them every once in a while. We had a couple of customers, but again, it was a very slow selling bait, and there was never a profit margin in it. By the time you handled it and did everything, you know, we have to actually turn a lot of these to actually make any money on the frozen. But when people started finding out, yes, this is good, and one person told another, now we go through from selling a couple of cases a year to a couple of cases a week. Okay. And I think if somebody starts catching fish with the clams, like on the black drum, that's going to make a big difference. And all of a sudden, boom, 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 that'll go way up again too.
Yeah.
Because I think people right now are looking for something different. Because snook, redfish, and trout are off the table. You can go out, catch them, have fun with them, but you're not taking them home for dinner.
Right.
So, smaller black drum, 14 to 24 inches, becoming a big thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Spade fish, people are finding out, they're good to eat. Most of them here are too small, but there are the occasional bigger ones at the Alligator Creek Reef, Marker 5, the Cape Hayes Reef, Danger Reef, places like that. You can find these fish, and they are fun to catch, ball with the kids, and some pretty good eating. Now, have you heard about any sand bream in the area lately?
A little bit, but most of them are still kind of in the back canals with the occasional person catching them off their dock. I'm seeing a lot of commercial netters going through the canals the last several days, so I know there's been some mullet around, but I think a lot of those guys are actually moving up into those canals.
No, they don't do mullet right now. They're doing sand bream. Sand bream is what these guys rely on to make their money.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a shame because, you know, I understand they have to make a living, and, you know, I am on the side of the commercial fishermen because we rely on commercial fishermen for our shrimp, our pinfish, and, you know, all this other kind of stuff. But sand bream, to me, because it's probably my favorite eating fish of all, as, you know, soft spot in my heart, so I'm a little like, yeah, I wish they weren't doing that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But You know, I understand everybody's got to make a living.
Absolutely. You know, and sand bream are great. It's just that there's such a small window of opportunity for anglers to catch them because they like that more fresh than salt content. So this time of year, they start to push out of the rivers and out of the way back canals.
And they come out where you can actually get to them.
Yeah. So and they are semi-schooling fish.
Sand bream in the canals. Crappie jig, little tiny piece of shrimp meat on it, about 2 to 3 feet below bobber, right along the seawall. And, you know, if you've only got 2 feet of water, shorten it up. So it's, figure about 4 to 6 inches off the bottom, great place to find the sand bream. But they don't want the shell on the shrimp. They want you to peel it first. Fussy little buggers. If you peel it, you've got soft meat there, whether it's on just a little number 6 hook or on a crappie jig, you'll hook them. They're there now. But keep that bobber close to the seawall. Use the bobber, peeled shrimp meat, and you're going to do it. Have we heard about anything whiting-wise?
Not this week, honestly. It's been a little bit slow. You know, the only spot that I had one gentleman talk about was out there at Inglewood Beach because they've been doing so much snook fishing out there, and they're catching the occasional whiting as bycatch with the guys that are using shrimp for bait. You know, so it's just, but it hasn't been great numbers this year out there. Hit or miss.
Just a little plug. We've got Fishy Radio coming up. This show is spawned off a all-girls fishing show called Fishy Radio with Jeannie, Heather, Dee, and Alex. God and Fishing is coming up, another radio show that's Pastor Donnie and the fishing guys. I might be one of them, might not. We got Barry's Tarpon World, which is kind of a general fishing show. You're going to enjoy Barry. And Pastor Donnie is, he's great. Always starts off and ends with a nice little prayer, and he's a good guy. But, and then we've got Bull Fishing, which is done by Big Bull David, you know, David the Bull. All freshwater stuff, bass, crappies, bowfin, you name it. David is into the freshwater stuff. And then we've got Cooking Fish. And you're going to love that show. You're going to listen to it with a pencil and paper because you're going to want to take notes on that one, Cooking Fish. All these will be coming up right here on the big WKDW radio. Why do I always want to say KRP?
only if we have turkeys that we toss out of helicopters.
Nice.
Live turkeys got to go out.
I
might rent you
fly.
The helicopter if you'll do that. I'll even go up with you.
Yeah.
I swear I thought they could fly.
Jeez.
But
wow.
The big WKDW here, got a great lineup of programs coming out for you. And Southern Fried Living, you're going to love that show. Great sense of humor on that show. All about living life in the South. Just letting you know, RJ, Robert, and myself have produced several other shows, and they're all going to be here on the big WKDW very soon. Watch the programming thing, and you'll find out when they're coming up. Getting to Spanish mackerel, another edible fish in the harbor. Good, bad, indifferent, good witch, bad witch, or a sandwich? Which one are we talking here?
All the above, but to be honest, it's surprising to me because they're usually not here in extremely fishable numbers inside the harbor this time of year. I mean, there's always a couple stragglers around, but the amount of Spanish mackerel we're seeing peppered through the whole harbor is kind of surprising. And I think going out there and doing a nice slow troll around the harbor, one, it's on some days it's pretty warm, so it's a good way to keep some air flowing over you. But
you know, what I'm going to do is I'm going to rig up
fish.
One of my old rods with about 10 or 12 pound monofilament line, not braided.
Mm-hmm.
You can't get the twist out of braided. So I'm going to take a rod. I don't have to use it a lot, just an extra rod that I still like, but I don't use much. Put monofilament line back on it, and then I'm going to put a American Fishing Wire AFW ball bearing snap swivel on. And I'm going to hook that onto a spoon. Now, if I'm going to put a leader on of one form or another, like, say, a little steel leader, because if it's Spanish mackerel, I use a lot of those black steel leaders.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to tie the ball-bearing swivel to the end of my line, and then I'm going to clip on one of those little inexpensive snap swivel jobbies, and then put my spoon on the end of that. Now, I like the crocodile spoons. I like the Clark spoons. And with that black leader on there, I'm actually have a good chance of actually bringing it back up and landing it.
Yeah, rather than getting bit off.
Rather than getting bit off. So I'm going to have that on one side. Now, on the other side, I'm going to take, I don't know, maybe a Storm Twitch Stick or a Poly X-Wrap, something with a lip on it. It can be braided line on the rod, whatever size you want. It could be 10-pound braid or 6-pound braid. It doesn't have to be heavy line. All the way up to whatever you want to use. You can use as heavy as the line as you want to. But I'm going to put something that's going to probably go 2 to 4 foot deep on it. And I'm going to troll those two. Now, if I'm going to add a third line off of there, I'm going to probably go to my back right holder. And I'm going to put a rod down. And I'm thinking about an X-Wrap 10, possibly that Nomad lure. It's got a big front end on it. It's got smoker tubes coming off it. It'll go down deep, dive. It's going to act more like a tractant. I'm going to use it more as a fish attractor or teaser. It can catch fish because it's about, you know, a little over 4 inches long. It's a pretty good size bait. But with that smoker front and, you know, the shape of it, it's going to wiggle down below the water, create a lot of presence. And up above that, I'm going to put my spoon on there, and on the other side, another set of lures. What would be one that you'd like to troll, Robert?
Honestly, I'm going to use you and your father's kind of the old school technique with a tandem bucktail.
So you're going to take about a 4-foot piece of 40-pound monofilament or fluorocarbon. I'm going to, on one end, I'm tying a jig, like a bucktail jig. It could be a VMC hot skirt would be a good one to put on there, a 3/8. And then when I get that tied on, I'm going to take a swivel and put the leader through one eye of the swivel so the other's eyes free. And then on the other side, I'm going to put an Ott Clark squid spoon. Now, the reason I'm being very specific, Ott is a zero. So a zero Clark squid spoon on the other end, and I tie that on. Now I'm going to take that swivel that's just kind of sliding up and down the line. I'm going to hold that up, and I'm going to pull it so that the jig is about a third of the way through the swivel. So, and then the spoon would be about 2/3 that distance. So you got about 1/3 for the jig, about 2/3 for the swivel. I'm going to hold that swivel there, pinch that line, make a loop, go through, take the swivel through that, creating a knot by going through there 3 times, pull it tight. I'm going to tie my line to that swivel. Now that one I'm going to send out farther. So I'm going to, in the back right holder, I got that Nomad lure. It's a weird looking thing, but it smokes. It's going to have a great noise and sight presence. And then on the other side in the back, on the left, I'm going to put like a Storm Twitch stick or a Rapala X-Wrap 08. And then in the 2 rod holders in front of theirs, because I got 2 in the back of the boat, and I'm going to go to the 2 in front. On the one side, I'm going to put my rod with the monofilament line on and my spoon. Probably, I'm going to use a Crocodile, I think, because I like the bend of them. And I'm putting that out. It's got the black steel leader on it. All the lures have the black steel leader. And then on the other side, over the top, that's when I'm going to put that tandem rig we built with the jig and the Clark spoon, because that other lure with the lip is going to dive down. I want that other one out past it. I want it to go beyond the Storm Twitch stick. Same side, but just beyond it.
Right, out farther away.
Out farther away from the boat.
Right, because that one's going to track a little bit shallower, and that way they don't tangle up on each other if you have to zig or zag or make an abrupt turn around a palm frond or some kind of floating debris.
Now, the thing is I don't think it's worthwhile right now trolling up by Fisherman's Village or the 41 Bridge, but I would troll past marker number 2.
Yeah.
I would definitely go over to marker 2, and for marker 2, I'm going to head towards the old rubber tire reef. That's going to be my pattern there. I'm going to start about a quarter mile to the east of marker 2, and I'm going to troll out going towards the old rubber tire reef. Now, even if you don't want to troll that whole way, make sure you troll from about a quarter mile before marker 2 to about a quarter, half a mile to the west of marker 2. Now, once I get over there, and now I'm starting out 2 miles an hour, and depending on current tide and whatever, I might be bumping up to 3, 3.5. But I'm starting out around 2. And get my troll, my set out there real good, start trolling. Pick them up, put them in the boat, maybe head over to the rubber tire reef. It's a forgotten trolling spot because you can actually troll right across the reef. There's nothing on the bottom. But the 4 markers themselves actually hold some fish. Because you get some bait and stuff going around those 4 posts. So I will literally troll right through it. If nobody's anchored on that reef, I'll go right through it. If anybody's anchored, I just make a swing around it. Now I'm going to pick up, I'm going to head out towards marker 1, out in front of Ponce de Leon, about 2 miles out. I'm going to troll again from about a quarter mile before to a quarter mile after. Don't hit anything there. Now I got to decide, am I going to go to the reef and fish Alligator Creek Reef, troll down it, or do I stop at one of the middle holes, or do I go all the way down to marker 5? Me, personally, I'm going to probably swing over towards the Alligator Creek Reef. It's a good bet. It's a little out of the way to go just for a try at a fish, but I'll probably run over there from about a quarter mile before the reef starts till about a quarter mile after the reef, and I go around any boats, giving them a 100-yard clearance, because I don't want to get tangled up in any lines with my trolling lines out. And the fishing, if they're there and they're creating any noise, they're going to push those fish 100 yards away from that reef. They didn't leave the area, but they're not going to be over the reef. They're going to be outside of the reef trying to get back onto the reef. That's why they came there, but they keep getting spooked off because there's boats there. So I'm taking advantage of their natural shyness. Boom, 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 somebody slams live well lid, whatever, pushes those fish out away from that reef. Now, I'm the one that's going to get them because I know they're being spooked. So I'm out there 100 yards off, yeah, maybe 50 feet, 100, I would say 100 to 300 feet off the reef. And I'm trolling up past there to about a quarter mile past it. Now, in order to keep so I don't have to run all the time or troll all the time, I'm going to pack it up. I've got the numbers in my GPS for the middle hole. Now, the middle hole is you have the northern hole, the 20-foot hole, we call it. Then we have the middle hole. Then we have the Pirate Harbor hole. Now, I'm either going to troll the Pirate Harbor hole, which is the better of the two options, or if I really got it in my head, I'm going to get do good at Cape Hayes. I'll hit the middle hole, just troll across it, pack up, head to the marker 5. If I'm thinking, I don't know, 5 may be good, but I'm kind of going there because I think I have to, I'm going to go over the Pirate Harbor hole, and I'm going to troll over that. Because having those numbers, and the Pirate Harbor hole is something that none of the other holes have, which is debris. Now, all of the shrimpers, we have a lot of shrimpers in Charlotte Harbor. Almost none of them live here. We only have a couple of local shrimpers. But the ones from Alabama, Texas, Louisiana, Tampa, all these boats come from all around the state. Every time it gets rough in the Gulf, they troll through Charlotte Harbor. If something is falling off of a boat or somebody's trying to create an illegal reef of some kind, it gets caught up in the net. They bring it up, dump it on the deck. They take it over to the Pirate Harbor hole. That's been where they've been dumping debris for years out of the shrimp boats. That's why the Pirate Harbor hole is so much different than what you're going to find on the middle hole or the 20-foot hole. You know, once you understand it's a debris pile there, it's an illegal dump site. And it's been going on for longer than I've been doing this. But that's where the shrimpers take if they catch a car or a refrigerator or a deck chair or whatever. They, on their way by, they toss it off there. You know, why throw it back in where they're going to shrimp again? Makes no sense. It's just going to get tangled up in the nets. And torn nets are a booger to repair. It takes time, effort, and money to do that. And time is money. So, anyway, so I might troll Pirate Harbor hole for those. And then my last ditch effort is over at marker 5 over to the Cape Hayes Reef. If I haven't got them by then, I don't think I'm going to get them.
Yeah, no, I'll agree with that. But me personally, I'm going to probably take a little bit different approach to it. You know, I would run, because I come out by the beach complex, I would take your path heading towards the Tire Reef and then stay on the outer edge of the upper 20-foot hole, working my way south towards Cape Hayes. And then head out to Boca Grande Pass, out to at least the last bell buoy, and then come back in and head over towards Burnt Store and then work my way back up the east wall as I'm coming back.
All right, but now you got a 24-foot boat, so your boat, no problem taking it near Gulf.
So does yours.
So, no, I have a 24-foot boat. So if you've got a little bit larger boat and you like and you don't mind going out into the Gulf to along the channel markers and stuff, that's fine. So I guess you could break it down. If you had a little bit bigger boat, Roberts Run, where you come out of it like Alligator Bay, go past marker 2, try the rubber tire reef, then maybe the top of the 20-foot hole. If you don't get anything, swing all the way around and head out to Boca Grande Pass. Now, I personally would probably stop and troll past marker 5. Just because it's usually such a good place. Not on the south side of Marker 5, on the north side. Sometime if you're over there by Marker 5, it's a really good idea to get a waypoint for the edge of the Cape Hayes Bar. So what I do is I go to Marker 5, make sure there's no big boats going to run you over or anything. Get over there while it's calm, and then point the nose of your boat at Cape Hayes. Now, it's very easy to see. It's the corner where the west wall comes down from the northern part of the harbor and makes that turn going out to Boca Grande. That corner, Bull Bay or Turtle Bay is right there, Muddy Bay is right there, but that corner is Cape Hayes. You want to point your boat at it and now start idling forward. And you watch those depths. You got deep water, deep water, deep water, and all of a sudden you got about eight, and then you're going to go into sixes, and then you're going to find the edge of that bar where it starts coming way up. What you're looking for is the beginning of that 5 to 6 foot of water. Where does the 5-6 foot mark start? And the only way you're going to find that is literally as you're coming around, and then just go at the sandbar, because that's the depth where those Spanish mackerel are going to round that corner. It's not going to be as much in that 3 and 4 feet. They really like staying out in that six. Six makes a Spanish mackerel happy, six or more. So go up there, find that. Now that you have that waypoint, you've got quarter mile before to a quarter mile after, about a good half mile of trolling place. And I can come right across that and head right over to the Cape Hayes Reef. And somewhere in there, you've got one of your best shots at catching mackerel. But I really want to have that waypoint for the end of the Cape Hayes Reef. This is the one time your brain can get you close, because you're going to go, okay, line up marker 5, there's the end of it, it's right about in here somewhere. But having that GPS point is a big deal for getting my trolling pattern down. I'll actually mark 3 waypoints going around it, where the start of the 6 foot of water at the eastern side of Cape Hayes, coming down in an angle towards the very southern point, and then another one on the east side going back towards the north, on the west side going back towards the north. So I'm starting on the east side because I come down the harbor, and then I got my southernmost waypoint, and I turn, I'm coming back going northeast, and I can hit that 6 foot of water following my 3 waypoints. I go from one to the next, a little trolling trick for you there, boys and girls.
Right. Now, if you don't want to go out that far, another thing that I like to look for, besides the obvious of bait, I like to fish those scum lines a lot and troll along those for mackerel. You know, you have the natural wind that will create little lines going across the harbor or down the harbor, and I like to parallel those with any type of spoon or plug for a couple reasons. One, I think that sometimes that's actually where you get in two different currents meeting together that are causing it. Sometimes it's just wind-driven and it just creates that. But I think
now, let's say the harbor's going north and south.
Mm-hmm.
And if the scum line was actually going, they usually go crossways to that, though,
correct,
don't they? Like
most
east
of the time.
To west.
Yeah.
So let's say you're coming down the harbor. Here's a big scum line, because a lot of times they happen as like a tide line,
mm-hmm,
type thing where the tides are meeting. And there could be 2 or 3 of them.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to be on the upper side of those, on the north side, or do you want to be on the southern side of it, the bottom part?
I haven't really picked one to be a favorite over the other.
All right, because when I'm out catching bait and I'm throwing a cast net for bait, usually the bait is on the bottom side, on the saltwater side of it.
Mm-hmm.
To the north or up the harbor, the bait's usually on the opposite side.
Right.
So just giving you an idea that it's very well defined. If I'm there and I see the bait, the more the bait's on the saltwater side of it. When you have an incoming tide pushing in, I find a lot of bait closer to the top that I can catch on the saltwater side of it versus the up harbor side of it.
And I could absolutely see that. You know, I'm going to probably parallel it on both sides, you know, go down for a little ways and turn back around and come up the other side to see what's happening. But I think...
Can you say non-committal?
Well, here's the thing. I mean,
non-committal.
Non-committal. Okay, RJ. Do we have it? I say non-committal. This is both sides of the scum line. Both sides are what I'm going to try. I will not commit. I will be non-committal.
Isn't that a different radio show?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay.
Okay.
Snook fishing. What's going on snook fishing?
Snook fishing has been incredible out along the passes and along the beaches from what I'm hearing from a lot of different people. So there's been a lot of land-based fishermen going out to the beaches early in the morning. Inglewood Beach, Stump Pass, Manasota Beach in particular. I've been hearing a couple of good reports up there. You know, I mean, if you're an early riser.
So what are they using?
Mostly what they're throwing
and
is the...
don't say fishing poles. You're going to be in trouble.
Fishing lures?
Okay. Yeah. What are they using?
A lot of them are throwing the pompano jigs, you know, the little banana jigs. That's been real popular, the small pompano size bucktails and just the standard bucktails, you know, like the flare hawk, still a fairly popular one with a lot of the kids at night, but the smaller flare hawks for during the day and the sprows, you know, the half ounce and three quarter ounce bucktails have been pretty productive. And a handful of guys have been doing fairly well with the mirror lure and the 17MR, the Miradyne.
Right.
Because there is quite a bit of small bait fish cruising out along the surf, and that's usually a fairly productive one, too.
I was just chewed out by a guy the other day in a very good way because he was laughing because he was talking to another customer. He says, "Has Frank grilled you yet?" And I'm like, "I did what?" He says, "Well, you know, when you come in, you say, how can I do this?" And he's got like 80 questions. He wants to know where your dock is and what you're doing. I'm like, I'm not telling him you where I'm fishing. You know, I was like, I didn't realize I was grilling people, you know, putting them in the hot seat, bright white light, electric shocks, you know. He says, "Oh, it all worked. It was great." He says, "But I've never had anybody make me give them that much information before selling me a lure."
Well, yeah, I mean, and I give the guys sometimes a hard time about that because it's like the guy will say, "Well, I want to go snook fishing today. Where can I go?" And the first thing they do is start babbling off Turtle Bay, Bull Bay, and everything else, but they don't ask the guy if he's fishing from shore, if he's fishing from a boat.
Yeah.
You know,
you got to ask the questions.
You got to have some questions to give them the full answer to enable them to be a better, hopefully more successful angler. So sometimes it might come off as grilling, but we just want to be better at our job and make you a much more proficient
but
angler.
The trick to it is exactly that. The more detailed they are, the more detailed we can be. And then as you're talking to the person, you're trying to guess their skill limit. So do you want to give them something that requires the angler to do all the twitching and moving, actually a more difficult lure to use, like a mirror lure MR17 or like a skitter walk?
Right.
But if they don't have that skill set, then you're going to do something if it's a top water with a couple of props on it, or you're going to give them X-Rap Rapala or Crystal Minnow. You're going to give them something with a lip on it where they don't have to have all the skill sets.
Right.
Something they can throw out and just reel in, and the lure will actually help them catch fish. So trying to judge where they're going, what the water's like, what they want to catch, and what their skill sets are, you've got to do all that in a few minutes. And that's why, if somebody comes in and says, "I want to do this," and we'll recommend one lure, and another guy comes in with basically the same thing, same need, but they'll get a completely different lure, it's because of what we're judging on all these factors, place, conditions, and they might be going to two different areas, so they're going to get two different types of things.
Yeah, if you're fishing out on the beach for a snook, you're going to fish this type of lure, this color lure. If you're fishing up in the canals or along the east wall, west wall, for snook, you're going to probably use an entirely different color, size, and type of lure in general.
It's like if RJ come in, I'm really looking for that whiskey bottle lure.
Works for me.
You know, if I could find that one that actually had that good Irish whiskey, you know, look to it, that would be good.
Yeah.
Let's see. What does that say?
I don't know. It looks like a crayon writing to me.
Yeah, I don't know what that means.
Bass.
What is it?
Bass.
Oh, bass. All right.
We've just had a little bit of bass activity going on, you know, with these few heavy rains in the afternoon. Some areas with spillways have started cranking just a little bit more, where guys are catching 1 to 3 pound bass. It hasn't been gangbusters, but it's still worth mentioning because last week a lot of the spillways and culverts had been kind of at a consistent flow because of the just average rainfalls, but this week we've had some pretty heavy deluges in areas, so it doesn't hurt if you happen to notice close to home or wherever you happen to be that you had an exceptionally heavy rain, stop and check some of those culvert pipes or little levees or spill dams and see if it's cranking a little bit more because those fish are isolating themselves just a little bit more in those areas. Just a little bit to mention. I know it's broad spectrum.
If you live in Northport and you go down to Price, Long Price, there's tons of canals over there. Another road up here called Hillsborough. Mm-hmm. And Hillsborough goes all the way down into Charlotte County. And you drive along, and literally what you want to be is if the car comes up behind you, pull over side of the road, let them go around. You want to be going slow. You want to be looking over by the water, so be very careful. You know, watch what you're where you're driving, and if you see anything possible, like, okay, I know the canal's over there, and you see a little trail going through the weeds, you might want to pull over, make sure you got good, you know, we call them Pine Island Nikes or Pine Island Reeboks, big pair of white boots on. White boots are great because snakes can, they're not going to be biting you, and you can tromp through there and not worry about thorns,
wet feet,
fire ants, wet feet.
You can actually make your way back through. I like the white boots for, because you can actually see as soon as they immediately start crawling on you.
Yeah, I can actually get the fire ants off my white boots. If they're black boots, they get really, really hot if it's in the sunshine. The reason we wear white rubber boots in the South is you'll last one day with black rubber boots on down here. Yeah. Your feet will cook. So we sell them at the store. They're like 20 to 25 bucks a pair or something like that. They're not a lot of money.
No.
But nice thing to do is make sure you got your rubber boots on, and you're going to have to do a little foot exploration. This is not one where I can say, okay, here's a path to go across somebody's property. You know what I mean? Because all those lots are owned by somebody. Mostly we just don't know who, because they're overgrown, vacant-looking lots. But you'll see somebody made a little footpath through there. You just look for the push-down grass and make your way back into there. You know, if you're a golfer, carry a little golf club with you. Push the weeds aside and thump us, you know, push snakes aside and stuff like that.
Thump a snake. I like it.
Well, I don't want to kill them. I like snakes.
Right.
You know,
no,
so
I'm,
but a little bit of a thump, you know, poof, and he's over there about 15 feet. That doesn't hurt my feelings none. He ain't dead, and I ain't bit.
Gotcha.
So, whatever. Fishing pole's best thing to carry with you. You can poke a snake with a fishing pole as good as you could a golf club.
Yeah.
All right, and we're going fishing there anyway. So, let me see here. What's up with the tarpon now?
Yeah, they've been frustrating for a lot of people those last few days.
Ever since, of people, or were you there?
I was there too, but there's been days prior,
a lot of people?
Prior to that and prior and after that, there's been few people that have been flustered with them. Basically, since the full moon last week, they've gotten all screwed up.
Stammer.
Yeah, there's some days you get me a little more flustered than others, especially when it comes to tarpon. You know, especially when I'm fishing, actually. The tarpon have been scattered throughout the whole harbor and out along the beaches and in the passes. But the tarpon that are in the harbor, you know, they're not rolling. They're not showing themselves the way they normally do. So you're having to really rely on your bottom machine and keeping a very vigilant eye out for the occasional rolling fish.
You were telling me about this, and I just was wondering. We've done a lot of talking lately about how we as humans, as fishermen, are changing the behavior of bait fish. Because as soon as bait fish show themselves on the surface, we're throwing cast nets at them, we're throwing sabikis at them, and we're catching these fish. And the ones that were inclined to hug the bottom, stay deep, and not show themselves at the surface are the ones who are really doing the breeding and the spawning. And it goes back to always, why do we have eyes? Because some fish had a defect that, you know, shadows passed by it. It fed better, ate better, was able to breed better, and so we ended up with eyes. And now with these fish, they're staying deep. Do you think the tarpon are staying deep more now because there's more food there? Or do you think, and the water's at 85, they don't need to come up for air.
No, they really don't. But
they don't need to come up for air. The food's down by the bottom. Or are we showing tarpon the same thing? You roll and we run boats at you.
It's probably a little bit of all that. But I think the main thing is mostly the water temperature more than anything else. But it's still, you still get that mindset that, hey, it's late July. It's hot out. You're used to seeing fish constantly rolling and then all of a sudden they're not. So you forget to think about the other elements that could make that change, you know, as subtle as it is. You know, 10 degrees, 8 degrees of water temperature change is giant. So I think that's really a big part of what's going on out there.
There's a huge difference between 38 and 30.
Yeah.
38 degrees is a world of difference from 30 degrees.
Yeah, one you can stand on.
So yeah. the tarpon are staying away from the surface because of the temperature, you think?
Well, they don't have to come up and roll because tarpon actually gulp air to breathe, you know, in low oxygen leveled areas. And that's what we get used to in the summertime in Charlotte Harbor being very low oxygen. So they show themselves a lot, which makes them easier to target. But when they're not showing themselves, it's tricky. You know, so it's been a little frustrating.
If you're going out, what would be the bait you would put on your hook? Live bait or lure? Start with that.
I'm going to go with a lure just because of the live bait you got to travel.
Now, with the live or dead bait, what would be your choice?
Live bait would be a thread fin.
So you're going to look for live thread fins, or you think a frozen one would work?
No, I'm going to use live thread fins.
All right, and there you
There's
go
too many days. Sharks and little, or too many catfish and the occasional sharks out there to be using that dead one that you're just going to get really beat up at on the
All
deck.
Right, what lure are you going to have, number one?
Bait buster.
Okay, DOA bait buster.
Absolutely.
Casting it or putting it out under a bobber?
Both. I've always got one that's in the rod holder under a bobber, always.
Okay.
And then the other one I'm casting, but I'm real slow rolling it close to the bottom.
All right, now, as far as the bait, you got to travel all the way down to Cape Hayes, and once you're all the way down there, you got to start sabiquing these.
I'd prefer them on a sabiqui, yeah. They're just healthier,
friskier.
What are
you looking for to get that bait?
You'll see them actually kind of dimpling on the surface, but they've been pretty consistently around marker 5 and marker 4. So just get out there and throw that sabiqui and get yourself a dozen and a half.
So what size weight are you using?
Half ounce to a 1 ounce, depending on the breeze.
So you can make good long casts.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And then you're just jigging it,
just
or
slow,
just reeling it?
Slow retrieve. Slow
just
retrieve.
Steady
seems,
without the jigging?
Yeah, slow retrieve seems to be working. Once I hook one, then I do a good pause, though. I like to pause for a couple seconds once that first one's on and let the other ones get attracted to that chaos.
All right, well, Fish and Frank here, Robert in the chair across from me, and in command and control, RJ. And stay tuned each week for more of the wonderful This Week in Fishing and what we're doing and how we're doing it and who's not and who is. And I'm not sure, but I know we'll be back.
Fish, 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 fishing. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line.